So, in thinking about what to talk about today, I was trying to think about what's going on in the world and somehow try to touch on that. So I was doing some reading, and I ended up rereading some things from a writer who has been gone for a few decades now. And I decided to present something of his work and juxtapose it with some of our Zen teachings, especially in terms of language. I want to let you know that since I'm quoting the author who was writing in the early 1960s, I'm not going to change his use of masculine pronouns. So I hope you'll, that is all right. So here's a first quotation from him. "The person who distrusts himself has no touchstone for reality, for this touchstone can only be oneself. Such a person interposes between himself and reality nothing less than a labyrinth of attitudes. And these attitudes, furthermore, though the person is usually unaware of it, are historical and public attitudes." I've talked with a few of you about who this is. But if I didn't talk with you, can anybody guess who might have said this or written this? It's James Baldwin. Most of us have probably heard of him, but just the briefest of bios. He was a writer and public figure whose life, I think, really embodied deep consideration of his own experience and of society. And he particularly wrote about race and racism and the effects on individuals and communities, and including during what's referred to as the Civil Rights Movement. So he was an American, and he was black, and he was gay. Now, as far as I know, James Baldwin didn't study Buddhism. But some of what he writes is so striking to me in how it reminds me of the language of Buddhist teaching. So, just want to let you know, I'm borrowing his thoughts with some humility because I think of him truly as a great figure and really a great writer and thinker. And I don't want to diminish his work by misrepresenting it or misusing it. So I do make comparisons to our own language, but I do so with respect to his work and life. So back to this quotation. When he wrote those words about, those who mistrust themselves have no touchstone for reality, and being separated from reality by a labyrinth of attitudes, he was talking about white American men and women who, he said, could not apprehend reality because they could not understand themselves. And I borrow this language because, as I say, like some other things he's written, it reflects larger truths. So understanding ourselves, he says this is necessary to apprehend reality. You might know that in the very first entry in Dropping Ashes on the Buddha, somebody asks Zen Master Sung San, "What is Zen?" And part of his answer, he talks about don't know mind, and then he sums it up. He says, "Zen is understanding yourself." In Zen practice, we are, in fact, aspiring to cut off, our mistaken views, perceive truth as clearly as we can, including understanding ourselves, our nature. Mr. Baldwin wrote that a labyrinth of attitudes can obscure reality. In Buddhist terms, what language might we use or what terms might we use to point to our own labyrinth of attitudes? Any ideas? False self? Okay, yeah, maybe a sense of a personal identity. Self-cherishing? Yeah. Okay, thanks. So I used the word karma. I was talking with Zen Master Zhang Brong about this. Karma, our karma, our conditioning can cloud our view. We have these mistaken views. And do we have this karma? Our teaching says that we do. The temple rules say, understand that you've accumulated bad karma that is like a big mountain. So this certainly suggests that we have some work to do. And that sustained effort is necessary to whittle down our obscurations. Now, this is part of our work of Zen. It's cutting through this karma, seeing clearly. It's cutting through this labyrinth. Thorny jungle also comes to mind for me, from that koan. So it's not a small undertaking when we decide to do this, when we suspend what we believe to be true, all that we're conditioned to believe, including about ourselves, and we suspend the historic public and these personal, the personal labyrinth of attitudes in an effort to see clearly, what we are and how things work. It's a great undertaking. I would even say that it's a radical undertaking to try to do this. And here's Mr. Baldwin again. And again, please excuse the masculine pronouns and references. He says, "That man who is forced each day to snatch his manhood, his identity, out of the fire of human cruelty that rages to destroy it, he knows if he survives his effort and if he does, and even if he does not survive it, he knows something about himself and human life that no school on earth, and indeed no church, can teach. He achieves his own authority, and that is unshakable. This is because, in order to save his life, he is forced to look beneath appearances and to take nothing for granted." Now, to me, that is just beautiful. Looking beneath appearances, taking nothing for granted, setting aside all manner of dogma, perhaps even risking everything so that we can encounter unshakable truth for ourselves. One of the things also that I get out of reading this, particular selection, is the importance of taking our lives seriously. And then if we do, then something good might come of our effort. Here's another point I'd like to offer, with this quotation in mind. Here at Blue Heron, we're on the path of Zen. An authentic path of self-understanding with traditions that have stood the test of time. And I certainly feel lucky to have encountered Buddhism. I will propose, however, for consideration, that we are most firmly on this path, the Zen path, and maybe you think the same way, when the Zen path is indistinguishable from our life path, when in sensing our constricted vision, we embrace the path of cutting through our mistaken views as our own path, outside of any teaching. And when we're inspired not just to understand Buddhism, but to truly understand ourselves to the very depths. Now, Mr. Baldwin uses the term and concept of identity. And we often use the phrase true self. So, in using the term identity, he might be talking about, a personal identity and asserting that, building that, strengthening that. We think differently in Buddhism. We set aside our I and are looking for what we call, our true nature or true self that is part of everything else. So, but the terms are different. But in each case, there is this emphasis on and a search for fundamental truth, truth that can help us see how it is and live in reality. Mr. Baldwin also refers to survival. He talks, if you take this on, you're fighting against everything that might obscure how you your clear vision. In some cases, survival is at stake. So he's saying that, this is not necessarily a safe undertaking. And consider, if we're talking about setting aside our identity, letting that go can be pretty scary. In addition, he specifically asserts that safety as a goal is not even attainable. So here he is again. And he starts talking about the inevitability of death, the death of our bodies. He says, "Life is tragic simply because the earth turns and the sun inexorably rises and sets And one day, for each of us, the sun will go down for the last time. Perhaps the whole root of our trouble, the human trouble, is that we will sacrifice all the beauty of our lives, will imprison ourselves in totems, taboos, crosses, blood sacrifices, steeples, mosques, races, armies, flags, nations, in order to deny the fact of death, which is the only fact we have. Renewal becomes impossible if one supposes things to be constant that are not constant. Safety, for example, or money, or power. One clings to chimeras by which one can only be betrayed, and the entire hope, the entire possibility of freedom disappears. So he says, one can't be alive and free by clinging to those things which are inconstant, or as we say, impermanent. And then if we do cling to them, then we are imprisoning ourselves. This weekend, a lot of us, you know, in our Dharma dialogues have been looking at the koan entitled Xiangyan Up a Tree. In this koan, we're asked to experience ourselves high up in a tree, hanging by a branch by our teeth, with our hands and feet bound. And in this condition, we are presented with a request for assistance. And the single question associated with this koan is not, you know, how do you stay safe? The question is, how do you stay alive? Zen practice is the great work of life and death. How do we stay alive when every step we take, without a doubt, brings us that much closer to our death, or at least the death of our bodies? You know, how do we live fully, knowing that that transition is coming, that yet again, that one more change of a particular type? Mr. Baldwin's outlook, while unflinching about the sometimes painful state of things, including about life itself at times, he was not a hopeless person. He was, just from what I understand, reading some of about his life and reading what he's written, you know, he was really engaged in life. He had lots of friends. He spoke widely. He was involved in the civil rights movement. He had friends of all types, and he said so. So here he is one more time. And in this case, I'll let you know ahead of time that he was talking about the future of the United States. But when I read this, I hear a more universal message as well. He says, it's the responsibility of free men to trust and celebrate what is constant. Birth, struggle, and death are constant, and so is love, though we may not always think so. And to apprehend the nature of change, to be able to and willing to change. He says, I speak of change not on the surface, but in the depths, change in the sense of renewal. So, you know, he talks about birth, struggle, and death as constant. You know, birth, old age, sickness, and death, these relative world constants also inspired Shakyamuni Buddha, who, plumbing the depths of experience, realized the constancy of change and of continuous renewal, which, and I was talking about this with Zen Master Zhangbong, he pointed out, points to the teaching of no birth and no death, getting at that truth. So that's about it for what I have to say today. You know, in the Zen tradition, we talk about waking up. We could also talk about, as Mr. Baldwin did, coming to life, unshakably to life, being fully alive. So thank you for your hard training this weekend. I've really appreciated being here and being able to talk with everybody.